Testing. Testing.
വീഡിയോ എടുക്കാൻ നിന്ന യൂട്യൂബ് എടുക്കാൻ നിന്ന
விஞ்ஞானி அந்த மாயா காரியம் அந்த விஞ்ஞானி
කරන්න උත්සාහ කරනවා.
ඉංග්‍රීසි
දෙක නම් බාධක මැදින් කරන්න උත්සාහ කරනවා.
මේ ආරච්චි එක්කම ළඟදී මේ තමයි වැඩගෙන පටන් ගන්න.
නේද යනවා. දෙරුවන් සරණයි. We've been trying to get connected actually via our usual channels, YouTube and the web radio, for a fairly all the courses lined up to get that result today. But YouTube appears to be functioning, and I'm just waiting for one of our listeners to confirm that you can hear me via YouTube, and when I've had that confirmation we will get started. Here on Sunday, this is another sound test. We are streaming live via YouTube at the moment. I'm just looking for someone, one of our listeners, to confirm that YouTube is in fact functional and you're able to hear, listen to this transmission. Okay, I think someone has just confirmed that we are audible on YouTube. If that changes, then please let me know. Just for some reason, the channel appears to be a bit patchy today. Okay, if you're only hearing the background noise, then hopefully you should begin to hear me speaking momentarily. There was a bit of background noise for a while, and the background noise was just there as a test to check that you were able to hear me. So, to begin with, apologies for the delay today. You've probably been waiting since for about a couple of hours now. Added to the delay in setting ourselves up, we had some technical issues, and I do apologize for that. But it appears we are okay to get started now. So without any further delay, let's get going. I'm connected via Skype as well as the YouTube chat session. Chat window. So if you have any comments, if you have any questions, or even any issues with listening to the YouTube broadcast, then please let me know. Even if it's midstream, then I may be able to do something about it. Either way, the recording is being made right now, and we will share it after the sermon. Okay, great. So, as usual, we remind ourselves that it is because of the perfect one with infinite compassion that we have his Dhamma today. The Dhamma that was uncovered after having been lost for many, many eons. This is what happens when after a Buddha comes and goes. Sometimes it can be many thousands of years, sometimes many eons that is lapsed before another Buddha comes along, another Samma Sambuddha comes along and preaches the Dhamma, and for that time the world is void. The entire universe, in fact, is void of the Buddha's teaching, and therefore there is no mechanism, there is no method with which beings can attain Nibbana. There is no method to attain enlightenment, and therefore beings are born, they die, and they go through this cycle of samsara without any refuge, without any hope of salvation. So it is absolutely essential, it is absolutely necessary, and it's absolutely vital that we use a moment to reflect on the fact that we have the Lord Buddha's teaching today, and it's because we have been fortunate enough to be born in an era where the Buddha's teaching is still alive, where the Buddha's teaching is still available in a way, in a format that we can use it to understand life, the world we live in, why it's full of suffering, unsatisfactoriness, and also, if that is the problem, then the solution to that problem, how do we remove ourselves from that problem? So, as we begin, And before we begin, let us pay refuge to the Lord Buddha and pay our deepest respects to him for having done what he did, having committed 45 long years of his life for our salvation, for our happiness, and to relieve us from this painful process that is Nibbana. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Clearly, although you and I and those people who are able to, our listeners who are able to listen to these programs, listen to these sermons, be it in English, in Sinhala, or any other language for that matter, we are fortunate enough to be receiving this message. We are fortunate enough to be the Lord Buddha's disciples, his students. But there are others who, because they were born before the Lord Buddha's era, or perhaps having been born in the Lord Buddha's era, made no use of the Lord Buddha's teaching, which is a reminder to ourselves. In fact, we are fortunate enough to be recipients of his knowledge, of his teaching, and therefore what is it that we must do with that? Because all we have is this lifetime. All we have is this finite amount of life that is within ourselves, that is, that we have brought with us. Unfortunately, none of us know how long that is. And so every day is merely a wish and a hope that we can remain alive for one more moment, a few more moments, so that we can try and untangle any gaps, try and identify any gaps in our understanding and untangle the Lord Buddha's Dhamma in a way that we can understand it, in a way that we can relate to it, and attain Nibbana. But unfortunately, there are an infinite number of beings who are not as fortunate, who are either born today in woeful plains, who are born in places where the Buddha's teaching is not readily available, and there are also Devas and Brahmas who rejoice in listening to the Lord Buddha's teaching. They rejoice in the fact that there are human beings who preach the Buddha's Dhamma, listen to the Buddha's Dhamma, and that makes them very happy. And so when we discuss the Buddha's Dhamma, it is our duty and our responsibility to invite the Devas, the Brahmas, and any of those sentient beings who are unfortunate enough to perhaps not have been able to do what was necessary when they had the opportunity, and also any of our past relations, past relatives, who might have helped us in whichever way or form, shape or form. It's our duty to invite them to listen to this Dhamma and hope that they, now having received this Dhamma, will practice it and attain Nibbana. So before we get started, let's invite our distant relations, our past relations, Devas, Brahmas, and any of those beings who are in need of some support from either ourselves or from other Devas, to come along to these places where the Dhamma is being preached and listen to this Dhamma, and hope that if there are in woeful planes, may they use the power that is being generated, the energy that is being generated through these meritorious deeds, and may they be born in blissful planes, and may they listen to the Dhamma and attain the noble attainments that they hope for. So as I make this invitation, please join me and extend this invitation to those beings and anyone that you may have come past, anyone that might have helped you, might have supported you on your journey throughout samsara. Samanta chakvalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhammam munirajasa sunantu saggamokkadam Dhamma savana kalo ayam badanta Dhamma savana kalo ayam badanta Dhamma savana kalo ayam badanta. Okay. I'm hoping we are still audible, and therefore I shall continue. In the previous weeks, we spent some time discussing why is it that people still travel on this journey in samsara when, despite having spent sometimes a lifetime, many, many years listening to the Dhamma, listening to various teachers, people who preach the Buddha's Dhamma, and the message is always consistent. Samsara is painful, it's full of unsatisfactoriness. You know, we go along to those sermons, we sit down and we listen to, I mean, you know, think about how many hours of the Buddha's teaching have you listened to in your lifetime so far. If you added all of those hours up, depending on how old you are, you're probably counting months, if not years. So if you've spent that amount of time listening to the Buddha's teaching, why is it that samsara doesn't sound like a problem? Why is it that the whole process of rebirth doesn't sound that much of a problem to some people? I think what I'd like to talk to you about today is to continue that discussion a little bit further and try and put some more meat around the bone. So we discussed about suffering, we discussed about why people cling on to worldly things, worldly possessions. Sometimes it's titles behind names, sometimes it's material possessions like cars and vehicles and houses, sometimes it's people, sometimes it's families and children, wives, husbands, brothers, sisters. Everyone's different. Everyone's different because everyone has an attachment or attachments to different things. However, there is also something that is common across all sentient beings. When the Buddha described the world and he defined the world, his definition was, the world can be defined as the combination or the collection of the five aggregates. These were form or rupa, feeling or vedana, recognition, identification or sanya, activity towards formation or sankhara, and consciousness or vijnana. So rupa, vedana, sanya, sankhara, vijnana. This is how he defined the world. Now, when I say the word the world, I'm sure most of you will be thinking of the globe. You might have one at home, or perhaps you've seen something on TV with the seven oceans and the land masses, you know, the five continents, the seven oceans. That's probably what you're thinking right now when I say the word, when you hear the word the world. But how much of that world that you're thinking about right now really means anything to you? Because to take a really simple example, imagine you're at home, there's something going on in the adjoining room. So imagine you're in your bedroom, something's happening, you know, in the next room, say your sister's bedroom or your mother's, your father's, whatever, just the other bedroom. You have no way to perceive what's going on in there. Let's imagine someone's watching TV there. You know, they've got a headset plugged in. Therefore you're not hearing any sounds coming from that room. You can't see any pictures. You can't, you know, there are no sights coming out of that room. All you know is there's a wall separating that room and yours. You're probably aware that something's going on because you saw someone going in there. But that's as far as your perception of what's going on in that room is. Beyond that point, you have no idea. So they may be doing something that you like. They may be doing something that you dislike. They may be doing something that is completely, you have absolutely no care in the world about. Perhaps they're just doing their homework. You know, that has nothing to do with yourselves. So what they're doing in that room is not in scope of your universe. So your universe does not include what's happening in there. Unless perhaps, say, you're trying to do your homework and there's noise coming from the other room. Now it's bothering you. You're trying to focus, you're trying to concentrate on your work, and there's noise coming from the other room, and therefore it's distracting. Now what's going on in that room is your problem. I mean, in a conventional sense. One could argue, well, why is it my problem? I mean, we'll come to that. Technically, fundamentally, nothing in this world should be your problem. But let's not go there just yet. But until you either hear something, or you either see something, or perhaps you smell something, unlikely you'll taste something happening or going on in the next room, and it's unlikely you'll feel something. But you know, again, it's possible. Imagine they're banging on a desk and you're feeling the vibrations. That's possible. So unless you sense what's happening in the next room in some way, shape or form, what's going on in there has got nothing to do with you. it's not part of your universe and it's not part of your world. Now why isn't that part of your world? It's because what is the world to us? As the Buddha described it, I mean he defined the world in a multitude of different ways. One way was, he said, you know, it's Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vijnana. He also defined it as Nama Rupa. He also defined it as the different Ayatana. So Rupa Ayatana, Sabda Ayatana, Osota Ayatana, Gandha Ayatana, Jivha Ayatana, Kaya Ayatana, Mana Ayatana, and so forth. So he defines the world in a number of different ways. He also defined it as Paricchasamuppada, dependent origination. In any way you take it, doesn't matter which one of these ways you want to look at the world, fundamentally, the world has got to be something that interacts with you in some way. And this interaction comes in the shape of Rupa Vedana Sanya Sankara Vinyana. Because if you can't absorb, if you can't perceive any rupa, any kind of form, so here we are talking about rupa, which are sights, things you see through your eyes, or forms that you see through your eyes, forms that you hear through your ears, that's sabda rupa. Forms that you, and when I use the word form, this is where, you know, the English translation might be a little bit difficult for someone to grasp what is he actually talking about, because the word rupa has a lot of meaning inside it. The translation that I'm trying to use here, which is form or material form, and I'm hoping it conveys the meaning that is contained within that word. It's essentially something that can be pointed out, something that can be distinguished from another. So if you take, I'll use an example here, and hopefully that'll make some sense. Let's say you're looking at a wall, and you can see that there is a picture that's hung on the wall. Now, the wall itself is a rupa. You're seeing it through your ears. Through your eyes. And you're seeing the frame, perhaps that is bordering this picture. And then there's also the picture that is within the frame. So essentially, at a fundamental level, you're seeing three distinct objects. Perhaps you can also see that it's hung using some string onto a nail on the wall. Now, how are you able to distinguish all of these different objects as distinct objects? The way that the eyes can distinguish one object from another is when it sees difference in color. So if you're looking at a wall, and let's say it's a white wall, if you're looking at a white wall and the picture is also white, all aspects of it, all bits of it, you know, the borders and the entire picture is also white, then you're not going to be able to distinctively spot the picture in the background. It's all going to appear as one. The picture is just going to blend into the background. I mean, this is where the word blending in comes in. You know how sometimes you might have seen plays where people just appear from the background. You know, they've always been standing there. All they do is perhaps turn around, and then you realize it's been a black background. This stage was black, or the background of the stage was black, and this person was just, they had just turned their back towards us, and they were wearing a black dress. Except when they turned around, they were wearing something white, or the front side of that dress was white. So, when you're looking at that person on the, when you're looking at the actor on the stage, the reason you're not able to see this person is because, you know, they've just blended into the background. So, your eyes couldn't spot this person. In another way, your eyes weren't able to distinguish one form from another. And that's because all your eyes can spot is difference in color. Because what you're actually seeing is just the border of an object. When you have one color that is contrasting with another, and that's how two objects can be spotted as distinct objects, when the two come, when one comes in front of the other, or one comes side by side with the other, all you're seeing is the border of that object. Imagine, you know, a silhouette, someone standing, you know, you're just seeing a shadow of someone. You know, that's how you see a silhouette. All you're seeing is just the border of that person against the background. So when we talk about form, and form in the sense of what your eyes can see, we are now talking about the background, which has a certain color. So that is one of the rupa, and you're now seeing the object that is contrasting with that in a different color, and therefore that is another rupa. Now, I'll use another example here, which you probably will be familiar with, where you might have seen times when people. Perhaps at school, when you're trying to learn how colors mix to give another color, you have three circles, one on each other, and therefore you see how when two colors mix, you get a different color. I think the colors that are used for this is red, yellow, and blue, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, red, green, and blue. Red, green, and blue. RGB. And then when various colors mix, you get other shades or different colors. Now, when that happens, you're now seeing, you know, before, so imagine those three circles were apart. You're seeing three rupa against another background. If that was white, then again four rupa. Two of these circles come together, you're now seeing another rupa where the two overlay, and another color has come into being, and when the third circle comes along, now you're seeing an additional two colors. So that's rupa. Now, shabda rupa is, or the forms that you pick up through your ears are not that different from that. except obviously we're talking about sounds here. An example of this might be when you're listening to a symphony and you're hearing various instruments being played at a symphony. You're hearing, say, someone's playing an organ, someone's playing a guitar, someone's playing a violin, and you can distinguish each of these instruments as distinct instruments because you can identify them as being different sounds. Then moving on to rasa rupa, or the forms that you pick up through your tongue. Clearly we're talking about taste here. The tongue is able to pick up, if I'm not mistaken, there are four fundamental tastes. So there's sweet, salt, sour, bitter. Now you might wonder, well, how is it then that I can taste chocolate? How is it that I can taste pizza? How is it that I can taste spaghetti? Well, you can taste all of these things because essentially what's happening is similar to how those colored circles overlaid with each other and they gave rise to new colors that didn't exist until, well, those conditions came along. How you can taste chocolate is because the various ingredients that go into making that chocolate have distinct tastes, and all of these fundamentally are either sweet, salty, sour or bitter. But different combinations of these give rise to different tastes, and therefore you can taste things like chocolate, spaghetti, pizza and whatever food you can think of. Now imagine if the bit of your tongue that tastes sugar stopped working, or what's going to happen? And usually it's at the tip of your tongue, this area that can taste sugar. If that bit either got chopped off, it's not a nice thought, or stopped working for some reason, or you know, just say you were doing an experiment and you had some polythene over it, you've covered that bit of your tongue. Now you're taking in eating chocolate. I bet you chocolate won't taste the same. You're still going to taste something, but you're not going to be able to taste all of those. You're not going to get the full combination of tastes because what you've done is actually you've removed one of those tastes from that equation. So then you have we've covered rupa rupa, shabda rupa, rasa rupa. Then you have gandha rupa, which is the form that you sense with your nose. So we are talking about smells here. There are good smells and bad smells. What's a good smell and a bad smell? Have you ever wondered how is it some smells feel good, some not so good? And I mean, think about this for a second. You'll know that there are some cheeses that smell awful, and yet people like to eat them. Now, I'm not meaning to offend anybody that absolutely loves the smell of, you know, these kind of cheeses I'm talking about. I've never had the fortune or perhaps the misfortune of having to eat something like that. But there are various fruits that we find even in Sri Lanka, and I'm sure in other countries as well. Now, a good example would be a fruit called durian. I really don't know what the English term or English name for that fruit is, but I'll try and find out. So there's a fruit called durian, which smells awful. It smells as if someone's passed wind, but people enjoy eating it. So if you remember last week we talked about going on a trip. When people go on a trip, oftentimes they come back home and they you know, on the way back home, one of these fruits that go into the boot is actually the durian. it's about the size of a jackfruit, and it's pricky on the outside. It's got thorns, but it's sour slash sweet on the inside. And for those who haven't seen or had to eat durian, now some people really dislike the smell, and they will go as far as saying, if that goes in my boot, I'm getting out of the car and I'll get the bus home. Whereas others really like it, and they go, no, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And then there are others who just don't mind. It doesn't bother me at all. But when they go to eat it, sometimes you remove the actual edible bit from the fruit. You throw away the skin, and then you put it on a plate, and then you serve it. Now sometimes it's a different story. You know, those who said, I really don't like the smell, I will happily eat it. But you know, if you took all of those people, including the people that said, I really like it, you know, it's one of my favorite fruits, the smell is actually very similar to, you know, wind, as I said, the wind you pass, you know, because it contains things like sulfur dioxide. But if that person was stood in front of someone who actually did pass wind, he's going to find that really offensive, and he's going to find that repulsive, he or she, for that matter. So what's a good smell then? What's a good smell if you like the smell of cheese that smells like something's gone off, but gives that same person a sock that hasn't been washed in 5 years, which might smell exactly the same? I mean, it does to me. Perhaps, you know, to someone that is a connoisseur in cheeses, you know, they'll probably be offended, and I don't mean to offend. But, you know, there are some foods that smell absolutely, you know, very, very much like something that had gone off, or perhaps, you know, some item of clothing that hadn't been washed after having been worn to, you know, some training for like weeks and months. But, you know, all of these things, regardless, are forms that you pick up through your nose. Then there are the forms that you pick up through touch or texture. This is why when you go into a clothes shop, you want to feel things. When you go into a furniture shop, you feel the you know, it could be the fabric. You feel the, if imagine you're going to buy a bed, you want to touch the bedding. You know, see how does that feel? Or perhaps you are buying a new car. You know, you touch the steering wheel. You touch the dashboard, the leather. You want to feel all of these things. And they're all forms that you pick up through touch, through the sense of touch. So it's all of these things that are rupa. So to summarize, you have rupa rupa, shabda rupa, gandha rupa, rasa rupa, and potabha rupa. Rupa rupa being the forms you pick up through your eyes, shabda rupa being the forms you pick up through your ears, rasa rupa being the forms you pick up through your tongue, gandha rupa being forms you pick up through your nose, and potabha rupa being forms you pick up through your touch, through the sense of touch. Okay. There's also dhamma rupa. Dhamma being dhamma rupa are the things that you can imagine through your mind's eye. You know, it's the things that you know how sometimes you're in the middle of a lecture and you're completely switched off because you're in cuckoo land, or you've gone off on a tangent, you've gone walking somewhere through your mind's eye, you have no recollection of what's actually going on in front of you because you've gone into this world that you've created for yourself. All these mental images, that's what Dhamma Rupa are. And the thing is, people can create all types of Dhamma Rupa. And this is how, in fact, you know, if you took, say someone that was a sculptor, they bring a block of wood, and to you and I, this is just a block of wood that we could probably use to light a fire. But to a sculptor, he's asking me, how can you waste this block of wood to be used as fuel for fire? You know, I can sculpt a beautiful object from this. You know, a beautiful animal or some kind of a woman or something like that. You know, I can sculpt a beautiful work of art from this block of wood. So where did that rupa come from? Well, that was all in his mind. So he's created all of these Dhamma Rupa, which now through the process of Abhisankara, he's able to express, bring out and create in the world. So you then wonder, where do all of these things come from? You know, the trees, the cars, the houses, they were all at one point Dhamma Rupa. You know, all of humankind's inventions were all Dhamma Rupa. Unless, of course, they came about by mistake. Some antibiotics, for instance, you know, they were they didn't realize this is what they were going to make, but something happened, and you know, lo and behold, you've got something that has been invented and you didn't even know of, right? So in any way, you've got all these rupa. So that's one of the things, one of the five aggregates that make up your world. Then you have Vedana, feelings. These Vedana, or these feelings, are threefold. You have the Sukha Vedana, pleasurable feeling, Dukkha Vedana, painful feeling, can also be called a suffering. And then you have the Adukkama Sukha Vedana, or equanimous feeling. Feeling that is neither pleasurable nor painful. So you have all these, you have these three types of Vedana. And if you can, as an experiment, close your eyes for a moment and perhaps listen to all the things you can hear around you, all the things you're sensing right now through your body, you know, through the sense of touch. Clearly, you know, having closed your eyes, you're not going to be able to see anything, but your ears are active and your body is now active. And perhaps, you know, you've just had something to eat, or you know, there's some taste lingering in your mouth, then perhaps you can taste something. Now, if you close your eyes for a moment and observe these sensations that you're receiving through your senses, what you'll be able to realize is that some of these sensations are pleasurable. You know, think about if you're sat on a chair, your body is going to touch various parts of that chair. You know, your arms could be resting on the armrests. Your bottom is probably on the on the flat part of the seat. You know, how does that feel? Does it feel pleasurable in the sense you know makes you feel good, or is it starting to hurt? And therefore, after a little while, you're going to adjust yourself, shuffle yourself a little, so that you don't feel the dukkha vedana. And what about the sounds you're hearing right now? You're probably hearing, if you're listening to this transmission, then you're hearing a voice, most likely a dukkha vedana. You're hearing perhaps some noises coming from your environment. It could be birds chirping, it could be maybe some traffic, depending on where you are. All of these things will, if you focus on that particular sound, you're going to either feel that it's pleasurable, or that it's painful. It's unpleasurable, or perhaps it's just equanimous. So, whether you perceive your world through your eyes, through your ears, I mean, now, you know, feel free to open your eyes and scan the room that you're in. And again, objects that you see around you are going to bring you the same feelings. You know, if you're someone that likes to be tidy all the time, and you're looking around and you're seeing a bedroom that's very untidy, that could bring you dukkha vedana, unpleasurable feeling. But if you're perhaps, you know, you're looking at an object that was just recently gifted to you as a birthday gift, a birthday present, perhaps that brings you sukha vedana. But what brings you sukha vedana could be dukkha vedana to someone else, or it could be equanimous to another person. Either way, what you're seeing around you, what you're hearing, what you're feeling, what you're tasting, you know, again, you know, when you're having lunch, or when you had lunch today, or perhaps when you're going to be having lunch in a little while, you'll be eating some food, and you know, again, if you closed your eyes and took that food into your mouth, you'll be able to taste various flavors, and some of those flavors you'll like, and they'll be pleasurable. There'll be some items of food which you won't like that much. You know, so for example, bitter gourd. If you're having bitter gourd for lunch, or karavila, perhaps that's a taste that you know you don't like that much. But if you're having some dessert afterwards, maybe some ice cream, that is most likely going to be pleasurable. So you're receiving vedana through your eyes, through your ears, through your nose. You know, again, the same applies for smells, right? Walk into a toilet that hasn't been washed in weeks, or hasn't been flushed, you're probably going to pick up dukkha vedana from there. But you know, people invent air fresheners. You go into a brand new toilet. You know, it's a new house. You go in, or perhaps you go into a shop, and you know they always keep it very clean and tidy for their customers, and it smells like, you know, someone's had a bouquet of flowers in there a minute ago. Air fresheners and all of these things, right? So that's a sukha vedana. But you know, and then there'll be other times when what you're sensing, the smells you're receiving through your nose, is neither pleasurable nor unpleasurable. Okay? So likewise, through your five senses, you're going to have sukha, dukkha, or adukkama sukha. Through your six senses, the sixth sense being your mind, the same applies. You know, think about when you're imagining things in your mind. You could either be thinking about, say, you know, you're looking forward to seeing a friend, a close friend who's going to come and visit you after a long time. You're now creating all of these mental images in your mind. How you're going to be happy, how you're going to go out with that person, how you're going to go and do happy things, fun things, right? All of these are mental images. How does that make you feel? Makes you feel good, because they are all pleasurable. But what if you're going to give a presentation to a large audience in the next 10 minutes, and you've got a stomach full of butterflies? Now you're beginning to imagine how people are going to be staring at you, how they're going to be asking you tough questions, and if, perhaps, you know, if it's at school, then your principal sat in the front of the audience, you know, staring at you, you know, through his glasses, right? That's probably going to make you feel nervous. And perhaps that's not a sukha vedana, but more likely a dukkha vedana. So that's the vedana. So we've covered, we've talked about rupa, we've talked about vedana. What about sanya? So sanya is perception, or perhaps recognition. It's how you recognize the world. Now, to recognize something, that word is an interesting word, because recognition is actually made up of recognition. To cognize something is to identify something. But you can only recognize if you've had that sanya previously. And that is true of all sanya. If someone, you know, think about a newborn child that's just come into the world. This little guy is hearing all sorts of sounds around him. He's probably hearing the mother's voice, which perhaps you know, the baby's heard while it was in the mother's stomach or tummy for some time, you know, through the vibrations, might have, you know, maybe a familiar noise. But, you know, the baby's going to hear traffic, sounds of traffic. It's going to hear animals, maybe birds chirping, right? It's going to probably feel some failing air conditioner working. Maybe there's a heartbeat monitor, right? So this baby's going to, it's going to be like a sensory overload. There's going to be lots of new sounds coming in, and this baby is going to be completely confused. It's going to be distraught, it's going to be anxious and stressful even at times, because it's unable to give, is unable to recognize these sounds. You know, are they a threat to me? Are they going to do me any harm, or are they good sounds? Now the same applies to, you know, to you and me. So say for example we're at home and we're waiting for, or you're waiting for your dad to come home from work, and he usually comes home around 10 o'clock at night. So, you know, around 10 o'clock you're waiting for the garage door to open, and you're waiting for this noise that is an indicator that your car, you know, the dad's driving the car into the garage. What if this happens around 9 o'clock? You're hearing the garage open. Your dad's never come home at 9. Now, that may give you cause for concern. Or say your dad's already home, and you're still hearing the garage door open, and it's 12 o'clock at night. Now a different set of sanya is going to come into your mind, because you've never heard the garage door open at 12. Everyone that is supposed to be at home is home, so who's opening the garage door now? Or say for example someone, I mean, you know, think about learning a new language. That's a whole world of taking in new sights, new sounds, because it's a combination of how, you know, the language is formed in terms of how you write things, how you read letters, and also how you can listen and speak that language, right? So imagine the first time you were introduced to either Sinhala or English, whichever the case might be for you. You know, these new words coming in, you don't identify any of these words. You know, to you they're just sounds. You couldn't tell if someone was sneezing or actually speaking to you in another language, because it's just a sound. You've never been introduced to this sound before, and therefore you can't recognize, you can't recognize this sound. And this happens through, you know, through your eyes. That if you're seeing something for the first time, say you're coming home, there's a car parked outside, you've not seen that car before. Question mark, whose car is it? Or it could be through your ears, as we just discussed. Could be through your nose, could be through your tongue, you know, new tastes, and could be through your through touch. Now, the only sense through which you're not going to get new sanya is through your mind, because your mind is not capable of creating new sanya. It's only going to create sanya based on what it has already received. And that's where the problem comes, when you're perceiving something through one of the other senses and you're unable to identify it, because your mind can't give it new sanya. It needs to be fed that sanya. It's like I ask you, have you eaten a kind of food? Or say a fruit, you know, durian was a fruit I referred to before. There'll probably be a few of you who've never heard of durian, who's never tasted durian. And you're probably thinking, what's durian? Which is why I describe the fruit in a certain way. Because until such time, you know, your mind was probably imagining durian to be something that is similar to something that you think it is. Your mind is going into action. And we'll come to sankhara in a bit. But that's what your mind is doing. It's probably thinking, oh, durian is probably something like an apple. Or something like an orange. Or is it a grape? Or maybe it's something like a coconut. You know, because you know these things, you've seen these things, you identify, you recognize these things, and therefore, when given a new dhamma, when given a new object, your mind is going to immediately go into action and try and give it rupa, try and give it vedana, try and give it sanya. Primarily sanya, vedana and sanya. That's what the mind's purpose is, and we discussed this some weeks ago. Your mind wants to know, oh, something's happened, I've just heard the word durian, right, take it in, now give it sanya. He's just said it's a fruit, right? Well, a fruit should be something that is physical, I should be able to feel it, I should be able to smell it, you know, fruits have a color, fruits have a texture. Again, you know, your mind's now trying to go through your bags of aggregates, the Rupa Vedana Sanya Sankar aggregates, those bags, and trying to bring up the things you saw, as in the sights, the sounds, the tastes, the smells, and the textures that you're familiar with, and apply all of those things to this new thing called a durian. So that's why before you did that, well, by the time I described to you what a durian is, your mind has already painted it in a thousand different ways. So I can't beat your mind at that game. Okay? So anyway, that's how sanya works. Then you have sankara. Now, again, going back to that example I used before, the moment I say durian, your mind is going to build sankara. Your mind is going to go into action. You know, previously I've used the metaphor of how cogs turn in a machine. You know, one's connected to the other, you turn one, the other starts turning. That's how your mind's working. Your mind wants to... Because, you see, the world is Rupa Vedana Sanya Sankara Vinyana. Now, if the world is Rupa Vedana Sanya Sankara Vinyana, and you live in this world, and what you sense as your world is what's real to you, then you're constantly trying to make this real to you. You see, have you seen those pictures where there are some objects which look like they're 3D objects, but your mind is unable to decipher them as 3D objects because you could never build something like that? And I can't remember the name of the guy who paints this. Is it Eisler or someone like that? Off the top of my head I can't remember his name, but you probably know what I'm talking about right now. So there's this artist, and what he does is actually paints these pictures. You know, he might paint a picture of a desk, for instance. And when I say a desk, you know, you're probably imagining a desk, or you're probably looking at one right now. And you know in 3D form how a desk should look. It's got, you know, it's got the top, and it's got the four legs. So in 3D form, you know what a desk should look if it were drawn on a piece of paper. But this artist is, you know, through clever manipulation, draws it in a certain way that your mind struggles to identify it as a desk, because if that object were actually constructed, it wouldn't be possible to do it. It's like one leg goes through another leg. I'm failing miserably trying to explain this, but I'll try and find this artist's name. Perhaps if one of our listeners know what I'm talking about or who I'm talking about, they could drop the name into the chat session. And also, you know, there are, and you've probably seen this one at some time, you know, where there's a picture of, again, it's just a silhouette, and you see it's depending on how you look at it, you either see a young woman or an old lady, right? So the young woman's wearing a hat with a feather on top of it, or it's an old lady and she's got a wide chin, and that's how the... So again, depending on how you look at it, it's the same picture, you don't have to turn it upside down, inside out, none of it. It just depends on how you distinguish that, how your mind does your sankara. You see, if your mind does this process of, you know, those cogs turn one way, it's going to pick up that shape in one of those ways. If it turns it the other way, it's going to pick up the other picture. So ultimately, the result of what you're seeing is how your mind is sankara. So, and this should get you to think about something really interesting. Do the things that we actually see exist out in the world? Or is it purely the result of how our minds process what we see? Something I want you all to think about. Because oftentimes we either attach ourselves conflict with the things we see, with the sounds we hear, but do those sounds, you know, those sounds that annoy us, do they actually exist out there? Or is it us, is it our minds that either determine them as being a really nice sound or a really annoying sound? You know, is it not sankhara that does that? So that's sankhara. Sankhara does this for, and we're talking about mental formations here. So, you know, when the five senses report what's going on in the world through the eyes, through your ears, through your tongue, through your nose, through the sense of touch, what your mind does is use all of those, whichever ones it's receiving, and it starts processing them, and it gives and it produces a mental object. To do that, it's got to do this sankhara. And finally you have vijnana or consciousness. So to do all of the above things, you've got to be alive. Your mind has your body and your, you know, this thing that we call mind and body, a person, an animal, a being, a sentient being, including an arahant, no different, has to have vijnana. Vijnana is consciousness. So it's consciousness that powers all of the above things. So these are the thoughts, and these are the mental objects, chitta and chaitasika. So the vijnana is what keeps all of these things in sync, the rupa, vedana, sanya, sankara, vijnana, how it processes all of those things, how it keeps them, how it, you know, it's similar to how you keep a well-oiled machine, right? It's the vijnana that keeps them all lined up, and, you know, that's all this fancy business. And this is why the vijnana, the Lord Buddha says, is a wizard, a magician. A magician, because what does a magician do? A magician uses tricks to create something, and, you know, this is how someone that's watching this magician perceives what's happening, to create something that doesn't exist. You know, pulling a rabbit out of a hat. The rabbit was never in the hat. Was what the person saw outside, or the spectator saw. Or perhaps, you know, create a parrot from a red handkerchief. Now, you and I know that could never happen. But the magician makes it seem like, you know, he actually did it. This is why it you know, really surprises and you think, how the hell did you do that? Right? And that's what vijnana is capable of. It uses the rupa, uses the vedana, uses sankhara and sanya. It brings all of these things together and produces this result, which is the mental object. That's the objective, that's the purpose of vijnana. So if what we are attached to is the world that we live in. Now, going back to what we said at the beginning, what's happening in the next room, we're only aware of, only bothers us, only involves us, if we can perceive some rupa, vedana, sanya, sankara and vijnana from what's going on in the other room. Because if you can't take in any of those five things from what's going on in the other room, then for all intents and purposes, nothing's going on in the other room. This is why, even for perhaps if someone's in the other room, you know, and they might be running the entire, you know, United States of America from the other room, right? Perhaps, you know, the entire presidential suit is in the other room. But if you don't know about it, for all intents and purposes, nothing's going on in the other room. You know, someone asks you, is the other room vacant, or is it available? And you go, yeah, it's vacant, go, you know, please go in. This person unlocks the door, walks in, and, you know, there's a mob in there. Why? Because until that point, there was no rupa that you took from that room, no vedana, no sanya, no sankara, no vijnana. But the moment someone tells you, actually someone's in that room, that's all you need. And now your mind is capable of actually producing all of these rupa, vedana, sanya, sankara, vijnana of what's going on in that other room, which may not even be happening in the other room. That's what vijnana is doing. So when we then therefore say that we are attached to this world, what we are attached to is actually rupa, vedana, sanya, sankara, vijnana. And there's nothing else. No less, no more. Our world, our universe is rupa, vedana, sanya, sankara, vijnana. For as long as we have rupa, vedana, sanya, sankara, vijnana, a being continues to exist. When this being is attached to rupa, vedana, sanya, sankara, vijnana, this being continues life in samsara. But when you begin to understand that, hang on a second, I thought this world was something more than that. I thought there were people I liked, people that loved me, food that I really enjoyed, you know. But ultimately it's just rupa, vedana, sanya, sankara, vijnana. You know, fundamentally when you look at the building blocks, it's like, you know, you probably played with Lego. When you put all of these bits of Lego together, you might build a castle, right? You might build a racing car, you might build something that is really fancy. Now you give that, what you've built, to your little brother, and he's really going to like it. He's going to say, wow, that looks really colorful. Look at that, I'd like to play with that. Can I have that, please? But if you took it all apart, and now it's just a bag full of Lego bricks, he's probably not going to like it very much. Why? Because what you've done is actually you've broken it down into the fundamental building blocks. This is what the Lord Buddha says you and I need to do if we want to detach ourselves from the world. You know, it could be a person. Imagine a young, beautiful woman, right? To someone that is attracted to that person or that rupa, you look at that person and you're seeing, oh, beautiful hair, what a beautiful person, beautiful eyes, beautiful shape, right, beautiful lips, beautiful teeth, because inside your mind, your consciousness, your vijnana is playing tricks. What it's doing is it's taking the rupa, it's taking all of that vedana, the sukha vedana, right? It's taking all of the sanya, oh, this is a woman. Where did the woman come from? Which bit of that woman's body is the woman? Right? Then it's taking all of those things and it's doing sankara. It's doing sankara and producing this thing called a woman, when actually the woman doesn't exist there. So if you and I are clever enough to break this, what we are seeing, apart into the building blocks, that is the hair, right? The hair on the head, the hair on the body, right? Kesa, loma, naka, danta, tacho, right? The eyes, the teeth, the skin, the nails, and you laid it all out on a table. And now you ask that person, right, pick the bit that you really like before. They're probably going to run a mile. No, I don't like any of those things. Well, then what did you like when all of those things were together? All I did was just, you know, break it apart and laid out the building blocks. I put them back together. Now you really like what you're seeing. I break it all apart. Now you don't like it. Sorry, that doesn't make sense. So this is why the Lord Buddha says, if you want to detach yourself, you know, why do we want to detach? Because attachment brings suffering. Attachment is the reason why beings go through it in samsara. You go attach yourself to something expecting something good is going to happen out of it. Ultimately that brings you suffering. But without, you know, being under the delusion that it's going to bring you happiness, you go attached to it, and then that attachment takes you through samsara. Tanha paccaya upadana, upadana paccaya bhava, bhava paccaya jati. So you can't, to break this process, you have to break it at tanha, or you have to break it at avidya. Now, to break it at tanha, you have to understand what is it that I'm attached to? If tanha is attachment, and if you want to break tanha, if you want to shatter it, you have to look at what is it that I'm attached to. You look at a beautiful person and you go, it's that person I'm attached to. Well, where is the person? Does that person actually exist? Let's break that person apart into the building blocks. Now where's the person? Oh, there's no person. Are you attached to the hair? Well, then go to the barber shop. You can get bags full of hair. Are you attached to the nails? Well, go to a nail bar. You can get bags full of it. Or nail chippings. You know, just go around the neighborhood with a bag and you can collect plenty of it. I know that the thought itself is, you know, seems disgusting. But that bit of nail on the person's body is all of a sudden so attractive. How is it? What about the skin? You know, someone thinks, oh, I really like the skin on that person's body. Did you know that every day, perhaps every hour, you're shedding millions of dead skin cells from your body? What if you collected all of that over a number of years? You put that into a bag, right? And then you gave it to someone. Oh, you, by the way, you said that you like this person's skin, right? Here's a bag full of it. Do you think they're gonna take it with them? No. So how is it that you said that you like that person's skin? Oh, you mean just lay it out again as if, you know, it was on the body. Who's doing that? No one's doing that. It's your mind that's doing it. It's vijnana that's doing it. If you took something else like a car, for example, and you're looking at a car, you're thinking, oh, that's a really nice sports car, okay? But what are the constituent parts of that car? You've got the steering wheel, you've got the seat, you've got the leather, okay? You've got the carpets, you've got the shell. Have you not seen cars that have been in an accident? And while they're being repaired, or before they've completed the repairing at the garage, sometimes they allow to take the car on the road, but some of the bits of the shell have not been put back yet. So for example, you might see a car that's approaching you, and part of the buffer is still missing. And you look at that and go, that looks really ugly. But with the buffer on, you know, with the spoiler on, that's really nice. You know, sometimes, you know, you see bits of the car missing because, you know, they've not been able to complete the repairing process after an accident. And you think, you know, you in your mind you're thinking a BMW, you're thinking a Benz, you know, all of these nice flashy cars, but you remove one bit of that car, one bit of the shell. No, I don't want that. Not interested. So who's then doing this process of putting all of these things together and then going and attaching to it? It's the mind that's doing it. It's vijnana that's doing it. So therefore, if you got to the root of where this attachment is coming from and then realize it's actually this avidya, it's ignorance that's causing me this attachment. This problem is caused by ignorance. Ignorance of what? Ignorance of the fact that it's just a number of constituent parts put together, and then vijnana tying it all up together and saying that's one object, that's one person. Really nice, really good looking. Go attach yourself to it because it's going to bring you lots of pleasure. But if you looked under the hood and then you saw actually it's just constituent parts, bits put together, and then continue to see the world in that way, you're going to begin to understand that's all this thing is. It's just bits put together. Now, every time you do that, every, you know, tiny bits of ignorance get chipped away. You have to practice this. You know, sometimes when you begin to realize that this is what I've always been seeing up until now, you've now got the right view of things. You know the Eightfold Path, the Noble Eightfold Path? Starts with right view. Sammāditti. Sammāditti. Sang is avidya trishna, ignorance and attachment. Ma is to eradicate. Okay? Ditti is your view. Now, the reason that we had sun or avidya trushna up until now was because we saw it all as one unit. To stop that, to stop doing that process, to eradicate avidya trushna, what are we doing now? We are breaking it up into the part, into the various parts. And now looking at it from that view. Now is that not samadhi? So if you're able to understand that if I feel like I'm attached to any kind of rupa, vedana, sanya, sankara or vinyana, or if I'm attached to any kind of object, any kind of food, any kind of person, and what I need to do to come to my senses, to get out of this delusion, what I need to do is actually break it up into the constituent parts and now then ask myself the question, okay, which bit are you now attached to? That is one of the methods to eradicate avidya trushna. Therefore, if you accept that that is one way to look at the world, then you've come to samadhi. And with samadhi, your process then starts. Samadhi, then you go into sammavacha. You know, if you begin to see that this is all the world is, the entire universe around you is just pieces put together, nothing more than that. If you begin to see the world like that, you're no longer going to speak about the world in a way that creates sensual pleasure, sensual attachment in either yourself or other people. You're not going to sing praises about either a beautiful person, a beautiful car, right? All you're going to say is, well, what's the point? Have you ever considered breaking it up into its constituent parts? Now which bit do you like? That's what you're going to talk about, because now that's the view that you have. But up until now you didn't have that view. Up until now your view was, what a beautiful person, what a beautiful car. But now you're beginning to see it's all just bits put together. That's all it is. And it's my sankhara that's wrapping it all up together, and my vijnana giving it this shape, this form, and identifying it, therefore sanya, giving it a sanya that this is a woman or this is a car. Where is the car? Where is the woman? It's just parts put together at any given time. You know, when the causes come together, it's like, where's the fire? Where can you point? You know, there's the fire. The fire is nothing but the three constituent parts coming together. Where's the rainbow? You can't point at the rainbow and go, there's the rainbow. You can't touch the rainbow, because the rainbow is all but light being diffracted through water. For as long as that keeps happening, you're going to see a rainbow. So for as long as these parts, these 32 parts of the body, are put together in that shape, in that form, you're going to see this person called a woman. For as long as the bonnet, the hood, the spoiler, the lights, right, the wipers, the windscreen, the steering wheel, the seats, put together, you're going to see a car. And that car is only going to be there, it's only going to appear as a car for as long as all those parts are there together. If you remove any one of those things, say you remove the steering wheel, that's no longer a car. That's a car without a steering wheel. So if once you start to see the world in that way, you're no longer going to sing praises about the worldly things you see around you. You're only going to explain it as, what are you attached to? Are you crazy? It's just your vijnana that's doing this. It's your vijnana that's putting all of these things together and then going and attaching yourself. Stop doing that, because it's only going to bring you pain and suffering. Try and see the world as just a constituent parts coming together. Try and see the world as just rupa, vedana, sanya, sankara, vijnana. Because when you do that, you continue your journey on the Eightfold Path. Samma Ditti, Samma Sankappa, Samma Vacha, Samma Kammanta, Samma Ajiva, Samma Vayama, Samma Sati, Samma Samadhi. Right? And then Samma Jnana, Samma Vimukti. So if you can do that process for all things that you are attached to, absolutely anything and everything in this world, you know, at the start it's going to be a bit difficult. At the start you have to deliberately and intentionally remind yourself, hang on a second, why am I attached to this? Stop. What am I doing right now? Why am I seeing that person as a person? Let me see the bits that make up this person. You know, if you say, for example, so a girl, and you're thinking she's really pretty, and now you've got desire, the fire of desire in your heart. Your blood pressure is rising, your heart's going dig, 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 dig. Right? And you understand that this is raga playing up, and this is what's going to keep you in samsara. And you understand that I need to somehow stop this. Well, why can't you, in your mental eye, scan this body and start looking at the skeleton inside this person? Inside your mental body, why can't you look at this person's digestive system? How the food is being churned up in the stomach, right? How it's now becoming feces while it's going through the intestines. And actually, perhaps a couple of hours from now, he or she is going to be in the toilet. Why do we not see all of that? Why do we not see the blood that's running through the veins? Right? Why do we not see the urine that's inside this person's body? All of that exists. But we are not all we are seeing, although unfortunately it's just what's on the outside. The skin, the eyes, right, the hair on the head or on the body, the kesa, loma, naka, danta, tacho, that's all you're seeing from the outside. And even those five things, if you removed it, as we said before, gave you bags full of those things, you're still not liking it. It's only when it's all together. And who's putting this all together? It's your vijnana that's doing it. So you're creating something that you like, and now you're thinking that thing, that what you like exists in that person. And now you're going after that person. Who's created it? You created it. Your mind created it. But you're now trying to find it in that person's body. You're never going to find it. You know, I've often used that example of paint a picture of a holiday that like you'd like to go on. The best holiday that you'd like to go on, and someone paints the holiday beach. You know, they're drawing the sandy beach that they've seen in Trinco. They're drawing the coconut trees they've seen in Goal, turtles they might have seen in Colombo, right? And the blue water that they might have seen in Batiklo. And now they go, right, go find me this. I'm never going to find this. Because none of those things actually exist in one place. They're all bits that have come from various different places. So if I'm able to now see those things as distinct, different bits, now I'm no longer attached to a holiday. Because that holiday does not exist. Similarly, if I can look at the world around me, anything that I'm attached to, it could be food, it could be people, it could be cars, it could be absolutely anything. If you're able to see the constituent parts and ask yourself the question, hang on, which bit am I now attached to? You're probably going to find they're just another bit. You know, going a next step, you can also probably start looking at, perhaps we'll discuss it the next program, how you can see things as apo, tejo, vayo, patavi. Because when you get to that level, you are now at the really fundamental building blocks. You know, the lowest level. You're seeing heat in an object. You're seeing the solid nature of an object. You're seeing the flowing nature of an object. And you're seeing the airy nature of an object. Apo tejo vayo patavi. And if you're seeing those things, you know, how are you attached to something solid? No one's attached to solidness. No one's attached to airiness. No one's attached to heat. They might like a barbecue, but that's not heat. That's a barbecue. You know, the fireplace, you know, someone might like that, but that's not, you know, now you're attached to all the things that you're going to be doing around the fireplace, people sitting around, keeping warm, you know, it's all those sankara, those vijnana that come into your mind, that's what people are attached to. But this is just heat we're talking about. No one's going to be attached to that. So, today, I hope this sermon has helped you to look at the world in a way that perhaps you might not have up until now. Look at the world as Rupa, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, Vijnana. And the task that I'm going to be asking you to do is, you know, again, I keep saying this every week, over and over again, and I'll continue to say this. even if it's annoying you right now. 20% listening to Deshana, to sermons, but 80% applying it. So don't just stop, you know, don't just leave this sermon or switch off your computer, stop listening on to the YouTube stream and think to yourself, oh yeah, that was a good 2 hours, you know, I spent there listening to, I learned about Rupa Vedana Sanya Sankara Vijnana. If you're not going to apply it, you're going nowhere. You know, you could read books and books about Buddhism, you can even read the entire Tripitaka, but if you're not going to apply the knowledge that you take, you know, knowledge not put into action is not power. Knowledge itself is not power, but knowledge put into action is power. Therefore, listen to this and then go apply it. So what you want to do now, what you should be doing now, is start looking at the world as the five aggregates. Anything that you're attached to, you know, it could be your favorite cartoon, it could be your film, it could be a favorite dish. You know, it's the weekend, so you guys might be going out at some point, right? Not the monks that I'm sitting with right now, but perhaps you know, at home, you've got plans for later this evening. So if you're going out, for instance, you know, you're at a restaurant, you've got this dish in front of you. Try and see how there's Rupa Rupa here. Try and see how there's Shabda Rupa, how there's Gandha Rupa, how there's Rasa Rupa, and how there's Pottabha Rupa. Right? If you are at an Italian, you've got spit on your plate, right? You're seeing Rupa Rupa. You're seeing the people around you, you're seeing the colors in the restaurant, perhaps they've got some fancy lighting in there. Why are they doing all of these things? They're doing all of these things to attract you. Then there's Rupa Rupa. Then there's Sabda Rupa. You know, the cutlery that's clinging to each other, right? Then people chit-chat. The waiter walking up and down, sir, how can I serve you? What can I get for you? Right? Perhaps there's you can hear the chefs working in the kitchen. Perhaps you can hear, you know, there's something that's grilling. Okay? So there's Shabda Rupa. Then you have Gandha Rupa, the smells you're going to take from this food. Then there's Rasa Rupa, the taste you're going to get. Then there's Pottabha Rupa. How does it feel once it's inside your mouth? What about the furniture that you're sat on? You know, everything you're taking in right now, while you're there, will be one of those things. It'll also be Rupa, it'll be Vedana. So the feelings that you're taking, some will be good, some will be bad. Imagine you put in a bit of spaghetti in your mouth and it tastes foul. Are you not going to complain? You're going to spit it out. You're going to ask for the manager and you're going to complain. But most likely it's going to taste good. What if it's really hot and it burns your tongue? Again, that's just Vedana. What about the Sanya? You read the menu. You know, has it never happened to you? Perhaps you go on holiday to another country and you look at the menu and you don't know any of the things that's on the menu. Happens to me, well, not now, but it used to happen to me all the time. You know, you walk into a Chinese and they give you a menu that's got like 100 different items on it. I am completely lost. Which one of these am I going to order? Because all of those things just sound the same to me. I don't know which one of those things is rice, which one's noodles, right? I just go, well, just bring me whatever you think is good to the person that's taken the order. Why? Because I have no sanya about any of those things. I have no recognition. There's no recognition because I have not had a cognition before. So no recognition. But what happens usually when you go to a restaurant for the second time, and if it's a Chinese, this is what I used to do. Now I know something on that list. You know, today I order number 25. I have no idea what it is. The waiter brings me the food. I eat that food and I think, okay, that's good. I like the Rupa Rupa, I like the Sabda Rupa, the Gandha Rupa, Rasa Rupa, Pottabha Rupa. I like the Vedana, I like the Sanya, I like the Sankara, and I like the Vijnana. Next time, to save me the hassle, I'm just going to have, can I just have one of those, please? Because now I have some Sanya about what that food is. Because if I order another food, again, it's going to be new. And now, after I've ordered it, my mind is thinking, what if it doesn't taste good? What if I can't eat it? Again, it goes into dukkha dukkha. The what if, Right? It might be a really good dish. It might be the best dish I've ever had. But until that food arrives and until I've had the chance to taste it, I'm thinking, what if I've just wasted my money now? What if it doesn't taste good? What if it's got something that I'm allergic to? All of these, you know, your mind's doing all this sankara. And it's suffering. So you just go for something that you're familiar with. I'll just have one of those, please. So if you're going out today, this is what you should be doing. It could be you're going out to a club. You might be going dancing. Okay, if you're going to be doing that, then again, think, what are you doing right now? Is there one thing that you're seeing around you, or one thing that's happening right now, that's not rupa, that's not vedana, that's not sanya, that's not sankara, or that's not vinyana? That's all that's going around you. And then if you start breaking it up into all of those five aggregates, which of those things are you attached to? Whichever one you think you're attached to, then focus your mind on that and think about how that one thing brings you all this pain and suffering in samsara. How perhaps it's the colors that you see in the club, you know, the fancy lighting, if that's what you're attached to. Or it's the rock music that's being played right now, if that's what you're attached to, then that's sabdarupa. The fancy lighting is your rupa, right? If that's what you're attached to, that's what's taking you in samsara. Are you willing to be born, to come back into the human world, or into an apaya? Because you are attached to the sabdarupa and the you know, to those things, is it worth it? So that's what, these are the things you should be asking yourself. So, you've now been given some homework, and next week we'll try and kind of take it one level further down and look at how the Buddha explained and defined the world as apo tejo vayo patavi. Unless, you know, perhaps there's something else might come up and as a topic. But in the meantime, this is what you should be doing. You probably ought to be doing, rather than should be. And if you have any questions, then post them on Skype, and we'll also try and pick them up next week. So I hope that's been useful today. Once again, apologies for the late start. We had some delays. One coming back from our Hamdurus Deshna, and second with some technical issues. I hope that didn't put you off. And we look forward to. To join with you again next week. So may the merits of that we have all accumulated today through listening to this Deshana and preaching the Deshana help all beings that we invited at the start of this, the Devas, the Brahmas, as well as all those sentient beings who may not be as fortunate and who need your help and your support and the transferring of merits that you and I have accumulated to move on to better places, from the woeful planes to the blissful planes, and therefore from there onwards understand and attain the noble attainments. May all beings attain Nibbana. May all beings be well and happy. Theruvan Sadanam.